For the rest of the hour, we are going to talk a little bit about Wall Street and the myriad of scientists who work there, physicists, mathematicians, statisticians, computer scientists. Not who you might think would be running hedge funds or looking at risk management, but they are very important. And these calculating whizzes, they're actually called quantitative analysts or quants. That's the name they call these folks on Wall Street for short. And some have blamed these quants as the architects of our financial crisis, but others say, you know, it wasn't the quants who brought Wall Street to its knees. It was the higher-ups who didn't understand the intricacies of the financial models the quants devised. So could it be maybe we need more physicists on Wall Street instead of fewer? Here to talk about that with me now is Andrew Lowe, professor and director of the Laboratory for Financial Engineering at MIT Sloan School of Management in Cambridge. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Lowe.
Oh, thanks very much. I'm delighted to be here.
Why do physicists have such an affinity for Wall Street?
Well, you know, it started in the 1970s with the introduction of a kind of security that most of us know about called options. In 1973, the Chicago Board Options Exchange was started, and it just turns out that the mathematics of pricing and hedging these kinds of securities is actually the same kind of mathematics you need to explain the conduction of heat, the heat equation in physics.
And so that you can apply one to the other.
That's right. There are, of course, some differences, but yeah, pretty much the same mathematics holds.
Is that like Brownian motion that we were talking about as kids?
Exactly. The underlying model for heat conduction is Brownian motion, and the underlying model for randomness for an option is Brownian motion in stock prices.
So then it is like throwing darts at the dartboard.
In a way, yes, that's right.
and you talk about physicists. It was interesting watching 60 Minutes a few weeks back. They interviewed the Madoff whistleblower, Henry Markopoulos, who said it, and he was a mathematical wizard, and he still is, and he said it just took him 5 minutes to know it was a fraud, and took him another just 4 hours to create the mathematical modeling to prove it.
That's right. I think in that case, it was not particularly challenging to sort of see through the kind of strategies that Madoff was purportedly implementing that wasn't realistic.
Yeah, and he was basically saying that there are not enough mathematicians, scientists who are on the watchdog committees to actually understand the math that's going on in Wall Street.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, if you take a look at the SEC, it's comprised of mainly lawyers, and they're very dedicated individuals that work in government, and you know many of them can get higher salaries working on Wall Street, but they choose not to because they want to serve their countries, but they just don't have the kind of training that's necessary to be able to deal with some of these more complex kinds of strategies.
Do you think this might be a good place for scientists and mathematicians to go?
I think it'd be a tremendously valuable service that scientists and mathematicians can provide to their country by helping out and raising the level of intellectual debate and discussion in government.
Mm-hmm. So let's say that you are a scientist, you're a mathematician, you're a physicist, and you want to make that move more toward regulation or into the financial community, but you don't know anything about finance.
Mm-hmm.
What should you do?
Well, there are a couple of things to do. One is you might consider spending a year or two in some of the more specialized programs in finance. For example, the MIT Sloan School is launching a one-year master's in finance just this year to provide exactly that kind of training to folks who already have the quantitative background but want to learn the finance.
Mm-hmm.
Other possibilities are to read a number of books and online courses that are available. Much of this, I think, can be picked up over a period of just a year or two.
So you think that having more scientists will make it more honest?
Well, I think that having smarter people involved in these kinds of complex analytics is definitely going to improve things. Certainly, yeah. I'm always in favor of having smarter people involved.
Mm-hmm. And do you think a Wall Street career versus a research career can be equally rewarding for someone who started out as a string theorist?
Well, in fact, we've seen that. I would argue that it would be equally rewarding, not just financially. Obviously, we know that Wall Street salaries are quite a bit higher than in science. But as your previous guest pointed out, people don't go into science for the money. I would argue that the very best people on Wall Street aren't in it for the money either. The money is a nice benefit, and it's a way to keep score, in just the same way that scientists keep score by looking at the number of publications. But I think that really the intellectual challenges are tremendous in financial services. And so we see a number of scientists going into finance, not just because of the money, but really because the intellectual challenges are so significant and challenging and interesting. Mm.
Yet there are people who have blamed these quants for the financial crisis. How do you respond to that?
You know, I find it kind of amusing, and in a way, it's sort of like blaming addition and subtraction for accounting fraud, or you know, blaming the death of a mountain climber's fall on the equation F equal MA. It's true that in those cases, you know, numbers and addition, subtraction, and gravity caused some problems, but I think that the causality is actually reversed. I think that, in fact, we didn't have enough quants who really understood the risks that were being undertaken. And if we had more quants involved, my guess is that we would have avoided some of the pain that we're experiencing now.
Mm-hmm. Are there different kinds of quants? Do you have math guys who do different things on Wall Street than computer guys who do different things than other quants?
You know, there are, and it's really interesting that it's developing now into a whole series of special subcultures of scientists and engineers. You know, for example, in high-frequency equity trading, you know, automated or electronic markets, computer scientists have dominated because their skills are actually very, very relevant for engaging in those kinds of strategies. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if you look at the derivatives industry, physicists have dominated that field because, you know, their training makes them ideally suited for that. So we are seeing various different pockets of subcultures of different mm-hmm. kinds of scientists populating different portions of the financial industry.
So you don't think that the world of basic research is being hurt by these scientists who might stay in basic research getting into Wall Street?
Well, actually, on the contrary, I think it's being helped a great deal in the sense that there are obviously not enough jobs in basic research to be able to satisfy the supply of scientists being produced. We've got many thousands of physicists that are coming on the job market every year, and probably, you know, less than 100 full-time academic positions. So this provides a very natural outlet for all that intelligence and training to be able to contribute to society.
Talking about Wall Street and science this hour on Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Andrew Lowe, Professor and Director of the Laboratory for Financial Engineering. A Laboratory for Financial Engineering at MIT Sloan School of Management. Is it a real laboratory?
Well, you know, at MIT, research centers are usually referred to as laboratories. But In fact, we do have a physical room that is a mock trading room that we can think of as a laboratory where we try a variety of different kinds of experiments. So, you know, we try to span the spectrum of a variety of different research activities.
That's interesting. What is defined as financial engineering?
Well, it's really the application of mathematical, statistical tools to financial challenges in a systematic fashion. And, you know, like any other field of engineering, whether it's electrical or mechanical or civil, it's really taking, you know, these kinds of tools but applying them to one specific area of applications, in this case, financial applications.
Now, have you guys, as an exercise, figured out how to turn this market around or fix the economy?
Well, you know, we have done a fair bit of analysis on what's going on, and actually, you know, the most compelling explanation that we've been focusing on lately has been the behavioral or psychological underpinnings of crisis. You know, we've seen that over the last 30 years, there have been something like 17 national banking-related crises around the globe. Mm-hmm. And so this is not all that new from the perspective of human society, but rather a consequence of the combination of, you know, free enterprise coupled with human behavior. So I think that ultimately the way things are going to turn around is we're going to develop some sense of, you know, where financial markets are heading from the perspective of all of these mm-hmm. kinds of bailout packages. And then, you know, markets will settle into a new normalcy.
Well, you know, you hear all these stories that the markets are run by rumors at lunch that people hear, you know, about which way the market's going or some industry is going. And then they bring it to the trading floor. And as you say, if your guts are important, you know, are involved in these mm-hmm. these markets, I would imagine then that behavioral biologists would be good people to be sending to Wall Street.
Well, I think that's right. In fact, you know, I think evolutionary biologists, ecologists, and more recently neuroscientists have a lot to say about what's going on today in terms of the interaction between fear and greed. In fact, you know, much of the recent research in the neurosciences on fear learning is particularly relevant. We learn things from fearful situations that we don't during times of prosperity. And so I think there's some very important implications from that that scientific endeavor in this the current situation.
So Roosevelt was right about fear.
I think that's right. You know, absolutely. You know, we do have nothing to fear but fear itself at this point.
And so if we can reverse the fear, and, you know, I'm looking at the numbers of the Dow almost closing, we'll be up 4 days in a row, I think. That sort of might reverse the fear and might change the way people think about everything else.
You know, that's a possibility, but I think it's a little too quick. Mm-hmm. You know, if anything, we've learned from fear learning that the lessons that you learn from fearful experiences tend to last quite a bit, and it does take some time to undo that kind of experience.
Yeah, we just had a story about the experiments to try to undo the connection between the stimulus and the reaction to fear.
Exactly, and that's something that we think could be very well applied to you know, financial context. So one of the things that we've been doing over the last few years is actually wiring up traders with various different physiological measurements to try to capture the their emotional state while they trade.
Oh, I'd be afraid to look at those results.
it's not pretty lately.
And so they're trading on fear. You can watch a correlation between the trading and the fear they have.
Absolutely. That's right. And the correlation is extremely strong.
Wow. I guess that's one way to end the stock market today and the Friday. Thank you very much for that. It was very insightful, Dr. Lowe.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Andrew Lowe is professor and director of the Laboratory for Financial Engineering at MIT Sloan School of Management in Cambridge. And if you think you're a stock trader was trading and fear had something to do with it, he had him wired, and it is true. That's something to talk about over dinner tonight. Greg Smith composed our theme music. We had help today from NPR librarian Kim Oleski. Laura Pelcher is our science and arts producer. If you have comments or questions, you can write to us, Science Friday, 4 West 43rd Street, room 306, New York, New York, 10036. Also, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, where we are Twittering, and you can send us your tweets at SciFry, going on all week, and our podcast will be up there. And also looking for your videos. Flora's Science Friday Pick of the Week is up there, having to do with an interesting experiment with cornstarch and water. You're going to like it. It's some interesting stuff going on there. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.